This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 22nd of September 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 21st of September 2023. Before I introduce your readers for this week, I just want to tell you that the beginning of this recording will be played to a group of Winchester Rotary members next Monday evening. It will be played to them by Keith Hatter, one of our regular listeners, and he will be playing a memory stick on his playing box. It's to do with the founding of WTN by Martin Fayers and the launch by Rotary in 1990. So your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Paul Newman.
Good morning.
And Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Richards. The main headlines this week are: newspaper opens doors to newsroom, sacked doc will tell all at tribunal, major boost agreed for district's public toilets. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Newspaper opens doors to newsroom. Scores of readers came to see what goes on in the newsroom as the Hampshire Chronicle opened its offices as part of Winchester's Heritage Open Days event. The Open Day, which took place on Friday, September the 15th, also saw Winchester Talking Newspaper, which records from the top floor of the Chronicle offices, host guests and give tours of their studio. It was the second year that the Chronicle held an Open Day to coincide with the Heritage event, after the success of the first, which also marked the newspaper's 250th year in production. Editor Kimberly Barber was on hand to greet curious visitors at the listed offices in Upper Brook Street, as was Head of News Andrew Napier, reporters Toby Oliver and Adele Bouchard, plus digital editor Megan Stanley. Historic archives, which are usually in locked storage in Weymouth, where the Chronicle is printed, were brought over for the day, including some newspapers dating back to 1901. Visitors were able to ask questions, see the newsroom in action, and were all given a free tote bag containing a copy of the Chronicle, plus other treats. Kimberly said, "It was so great to meet so many people in such a short amount of time. We really enjoyed speaking to everyone and showing them around. The Chronicle has been part of Winchester for more than 250 years, so it was our pleasure to share some of that with people as part of the brilliant Heritage Open Days event. Winchester Heritage Open Days is organised by Hampshire History Trust, a local charity dedicated to connecting local people to the history of the area. And that's accompanied by a photograph of Andrew Napier and editor Kimberly Barber at the front door of the office, looking very welcoming. And either side, there are two magnificent baskets of flowers. It looks very attractive."
Thank you for that, Daphne. Now we have the second headline story read by Paul.
Sacked doc will tell all at tribunal. Thousands of bank support campaign. A doctor who was fired by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, despite an exemplary clinical career and the support of thousands of patients and former colleagues, is preparing to fight his case in an employment tribunal. Winchester Obstetrics and Gynaecology consultant of 20 years, Martin Pittman, starts his tribunal against HHFT on Monday, September the 25th, after what he describes as a 4.5-year witch hunt, which ended with him being dismissed. The Hospital Trust has denied that the much-loved consultant was fired for whistleblowing and raising concerns about patient and staff safety. Speaking ahead of the three-week hearing, Mr. Bittman said, "The Trust has repeatedly tried to achieve postponement of the tribunal, which was very concerning. It feels a bit surreal after such a long wait that it's now actually happening. I'm intending to simply tell the truth, whatever level of legal provocation I'm exposed to. I want answers that I'm still yet to receive after 4.5 years. I want accountability, as having, I believe, demonstrated repeated senior management failings and deficiencies in how my investigation was managed. I'm yet to have any confidence that genuine managerial accountability at the Trust actually exists. I want assurance from the Trust that lessons will be learned and that no other members of staff will be treated in the same disgraceful manner. Through this process, I have been forced to accept that there is simply no possibility of returning to the career that I loved. I have to remain realistic and pragmatic regarding my chances of success. As many before me have tragically found out, statistics are not on your side as an NHS whistleblower. Whatever winning represents, it will never adequately compensate me for the loss of my cherished career or the irreparable damage caused to me and my family. No matter the outcome, I will still feel I have done the right thing for the right reasons." Dr. Martin has been overwhelmed with support from former colleagues and patients, with more than 1,600 people now part of the Friends of Martin Pittman Facebook group, which was created following Mr. Pittman's dismissal in March. Aged 57, Mr. Pittman said, "The support has been absolutely incredible and at times overwhelming. Imposed if professional isolation has been one of the most damaging impositions. The documented support for me has counteracted periods of self-doubt. I would be going into this tribunal in a much weaker position without it. Knowing that I have this level and depth of continued support has been incredible to behold. I am so very grateful. I thank those who have put their names to their stories, but also those who have posted anonymously. Their posts, however, raise some very significant concerns. After Winchester Consultants' appearance on Good Morning Britain, the Trust implemented a series of changes to demonstrate support for employees raising concerns. Changes include the launch of Culture Week, featuring a big conversation event designed to encourage HSHFT staff to speak up, a new cultural ambition statement, and freedom to speak up reminders. The Trust then posted photos of three new murals, one at each hospital site devoted to the new cultural ambition. They read, "We have a culture that places people at the heart of all we do, where we all belong, and where learning, improvement, and excellence thrive." On the same day that Mr. Pittman appeared on ITV breakfast show, GMB, the Trust released a statement. It said, "Dismissal is always a last resort, and since Hampshire Hospitals was formed 11 years ago, no member of staff has ever been dismissed for whistleblowing or raising concerns over patient safety, and they never will be. Mr. Pittman has not been actively working at the hospital for 2 years, and the questions surrounding his dismissal will be resolved at an employment tribunal later this year." After months of the British Medical Association pressurising the Trust to release a statement on Martin Pittman's dismissal, Mr. Pittman posted a statement himself, emailing GPs and sharing on social media, as he felt his colleagues were owed the truth about his departure. His dismissal notice on X, formerly known as Twitter, has received around 300,000 views. He said, "I didn't think it was my place to tell people what had happened and why, but the Trust told me it doesn't post dismissal notices. However, staff have since received emails announcing the departure of other senior staff members, such as Chief Medical Officer Dr. Laura Alloway, Winchester Head of Midwifery Marie Watkins, and Director of Midwifery Faye Corder, as seen in posts shared on the Facebook group. The three-week employment tribunal starts on Monday, September the 25th, at West Hampshire Magistrates Court in Southampton.
Thank you, Paul. And we'll now have the third headline story read by Jackie.
Major boost agreed for district's public toilets. A major programme of improvements to the Winchester District's public toilets has been agreed by the City Council. After years of neglect, its cabinet of senior councillors has backed an overhaul of around £570,000 for the conveniences, which are being hit by vandalism and antisocial behaviour, which has caused the indefinite closure of the Middle Brook Street loos. Detailed plans will be drawn up. Senior Councillor Kelsey Learney told the meeting, "Public toilets are a very important service for residents and visitors, and with an annual cost of £200,000 a year for cleaning and £30,000 to £70,000 for annual repairs, it's significant expenditure for us. Among the ideas is to have a full-time member of cleaning staff to look after the busiest toilets in Abbey Gardens and Market Lane. If it cuts antisocial behaviour, it could be a financial saving," said Councillor Learney. First to be refurbished will be Chesil Multistory, Worthy Lane, and the St Catherine's and South Winchester Park and Rides. Discussions will be held with town and parish councils about work on the toilets in Denmead, Bishops Waltham, Alsford and Wickham. Councillor leader Martin Todd said the Lib Dems were tackling years of neglect. Since 2010, during 8 years of Tory administration, only two toilets were refurbished. 8 wasted years. After a long period when not enough has been done, we are now coming up with a smarter, targeted approach to improve toilets. Many visitors get a lasting view of the city on visiting the loos. You never get a second chance to make a first impression, as we used to say when I worked on Head and Shoulders shampoo, referring to Councillor Todd's former job in marketing for Procter & Gamble. Councillor Neil Bolton, who represents Upper Meon Valley for the Conservatives, questioned why much more money was being earmarked for the city toilets rather than those in rural parts of the district, Denmead, Wickham, Bishops Waltham and Alsford. Councillor Learney said it was because the city centre toilets were much more heavily used and so needed more work. Wickham and Alsford have most recently been refurbished. We are not forgetting the toilets in areas outside the city, but we have to recognise those toilets under the most pressure are in the city centre. The Market Lane ladies' loos get around 800 visitors a day, whereas Denmead has around 50. Councillor Kathleen Becker called for baby changing facilities in disabled toilets. Councillor Neil Cutler said the Chesil multi-storey car park toilets are very underused, with only 50 users a day and need better signing. And there's a photograph of the public toilets in Market Lane taken in 2015 and a picture of Council Leader Martin Todd looking very happy and smiley indeed.
Thank you, Jackie. That concludes the headline stories. In a moment, I'll start the death announcements. That will be followed by Christian comment, then letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, and then first person. So here, first of all, are the death notices. Britain. Jean Mary Jeannie Britton, 22nd of August, age 90. Cherit, née Bert, Hazel Cherit, born 28, died 23. Forsey, Anita Forsey, died on the 3rd of September, no age given. Hall, Eric Richard George Hall, died on the 22nd of August 2023. Hancock, Barch Hancock, died peacefully at the hospital on the 1st of September 23, and she celebrated her 80th birthday this year in fun and style. Hoare, David Anthony Hoare, died on the 1st of September, aged 79. Jones, Grail Reginald Jones, referred to as the Holy One because of Grail, passed away unexpectedly with a lifetime spent spelling his name to strangers. He was 75. Roberts, Janet Louise Roberts, died on the 2nd of September, aged 86. Rosen, Anne Rosen, died unexpectedly but peacefully on the 9th of September, aged 78. Underwood, Graham John Underwood, died on the 7th of September at home, aged 68. We now have Christian Comment, read by Daphne.
And Christian Comment comes from Rosemary Baker, and it's headed Green Christians. It has been a very wet and windy and generally unpleasant day. Although we may or may not have had the thunder and lightning the other day, listening to the news from other parts of the country, they have had floods and trees blown over. Other countries have had their problems, notably the disastrous floods in the Libyan city of Derna, made worse by the dams that had not been repaired giving way. Many people suffered during the forest fires which have ravaged other countries, caused by the higher than usual temperatures. Much of our weather seems now to be classed as extreme. For many of us who haven't been adversely affected, this has crept up on us until a bad experience brings it home to us. A Scottish bridge being washed away in front of us comes to mind. Those who keep records can confirm that it is getting hotter and the rainfall is either higher or absent, causing droughts. The explanation for this, we are told, is climate change, and it is due to global warming, due to gases from using fossil fuels causing the Earth's temperature to rise. We have heard on tonight's news that Loch Ness, the largest freshwater lake in the UK, is covered in blue-green algae, killing its fish and birds. This is due to the temperature of the water increasing in combination with sewage and chemicals discharged into it. This is another result of global warming combined with our behaviour. The countries of the world, including ours, are pledged to reduce the use of fossil fuels and thus lower the Earth's temperature, or at least slow the rate at which it is rising. However, our government is struggling to reach its targets and is even reducing them because of the effects they will have on raising the cost of living. So, what of the Christian churches, especially at the time of year called Creation Tide, often when we celebrate harvest? We follow in the Jewish tradition in believing the earth and creation belong to God, and we are but stewards, given it to look after and care for. Sadly, we have not always done this, and have often made matters worse by our behaviours. Many denominations and churches are seeking to remedy this by the creation of eco and green churches. This involves looking at energy use as well as recycling, etc. Like the wider population, not everyone accepts this is necessary, but views are gradually changing.
Thank you, Daphne. We have 9 letters this week. We'll read those in a moment, starting with Paul with the first one. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so in a number of ways. You can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email, and this is all lowercase, letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. I'll just read that again. letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can use the old-fashioned and very effective means of writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So that address for the editor is 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So can we have the first letter, please, Paul?
Clean loose, please. Eleanor Williams writes, I am glad to see that Winchester City Council is aware of the problem of public toilets in a tourist city. However, the money could be better allocated to ensuring that the ones we have are cleaned more often. I'm sure the funding comes from separate budgets, but saving on cleaning loos means that visitors will not come to Winchester, or more importantly, recommend that friends visit. Another problem for visitors is that on Sundays, the Tourist Information Centre isn't open and the park and ride bus doesn't run. Eleanor Williams, Courtenay Road, Abbots Barton.
A big thank you from Handlebar Cafe, written by Heather Evans. Further to the coverage we received in the Hampshire Chronicle, I'd like to thank the community that has come out to support the Handlebar Cafe at this tricky time. The Garnier Road closure has had a massive impact on us, far more than we anticipated. Our bins have been left, our suppliers have struggled to get deliveries through, and customers have not known whether there is access, parking or not. We understand the bridge needs replacing, but the disruption has been huge. We'd love to know if we can claim compensation, but have yet to find a way. There was a slight misquote that I thought it best to correct. We lost £10,000 in the first 3 months of the closure, not the first 3 weeks. For now, we will plod on and do our best. The car park is set to be closed again for the crane to return, week of October 2nd. We want to thank all the regulars and new customers who have made the effort to get to us to support the cafe and keep us going. On September the 28th, the cafe will have been open for 4 years. We'll be celebrating and hope we have lots of visitors. And that's from Heather Evans, who's the director of Bespoke Biking CIC. And there's a photo of Heather with four other members of the Handlebar Cafe team, holding up a big colourful sign saying we are open on the terrace of the Handlebar Cafe.
Emma Galloway writes about stained glass joy. As a resident of Winchester, I have derived over the last few years much peace and inspiration from sitting in the Cathedral Epiphany Chapel with its Burne Jones stained glass windows. In all the noise and bustle and technology of the main body of the cathedral, this chapel is a welcome haven of calm and spiritual repose in its uncluttered pale stone walls and jewel-like windows. However, much to my dismay, I find that a very bright, multicoloured altar cloth, which I thought was a temporary exhibition, has become a more permanent fixture. It has, to my mind, completely disrupted the spiritual and visual purity and harmony of this chapel, and it jars with the windows. A case of more is less, or rather, less is more. This chapel and our wonderful cathedral are a national heritage, even a global one, and I'd respectfully but strongly like to object to the imposition of personal taste in the choice and introduction of this altar cloth into this beautiful chapel, and would like to plead that it be removed. And that's from Emma Galloway, Closentum Road, St Cross.
Roger Stevens writes, the title of the letter is Social Housing the Key? Eileen Berry, in the Chronicle letters of September the 7th, expressed her concern about the impact of diverting the Andover Road for the new Kings Barton housing estate. This is a concern I share. However, I was astonished to discover that the builders seemed to have been sitting in the long grass watching the snails whiz by. 2,000 homes are planned, but the 650th is not due to be finished until mid-2025. So it will be 18 months before the development is even one-third complete. This ties in with recent reports in the press that nationally, planning permission has been granted for more than 1 million homes on sites where development has yet to be started. Meanwhile, the developers howl for more greenfield sites to be given to them, and Parliament has just thrown out the legislation that was designed to ensure that new developments do not have an adverse impact on local water quality. All in the interest of building more houses. Yes, we do need to build more houses, and people talk about the housing crisis, but the will to solve it does not exist. It is not in the builder's interest to build more, as the prices would fall and the value of your house and mine would fall in parallel. Anyway, the crisis does not matter because it only really affects young people, and young people do not vote. The only solution to the housing crisis would be a plan so shocking that I hardly dare put it into print. It is to build a great deal of social housing. Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
This letter is titled Chanel in the City from Penny Clamp. In June and July 2022, I wrote to the Hampshire Chronicle about the old Sainsbury's shop in Winchester. Currently, there is an exhibition about Coco Chanel at the V&A, and it made me remember that there was a Chanel shop in Winchester on the High Street, to the right of the Buttercross. I wonder if there is any record of this shop. I presume that it was linked to the main fashion house, as the name would be copyrighted. There were a few very high-end ladies' fashion shops in Winchester that I can remember in the 60s and part of the 70s, at least two in the square. Winchester used to be quite a mix of high-end and everyday on the High Street, and the quieter and more chic square. Ordinary mortals never set foot in those expensive shops. I'd love to hear whether anyone remembers those shops. And that's from Penny Clamp, Osby in Lincolnshire.
Phil Wakeman writes, I read with interest the proposal of the West Meon Pub Limited to develop the car park of the West Meon Public House. Normally, I'd have read this and moved on. However, I noticed there was a link to Caffeine and Machine. There is a Caffeine and Machine near Leamington Spa, which has established a fantastic place for cars and their proud owners to meet. This is no amateur affair, but professionally organised, sensible and strictly controlled, the owners and their vehicles taking considerable care when driving to and from. For a long time now, there has been a need in this area for owners of cars and bikes to meet and chat, something the current Caffeine and Machines demonstrate so well. Car meets don't have to mean antagonism and antisocial behaviour. It's worth noting that the newly installed speed cameras along the surrounding roads make speeding practically impossible. The local economy with more jobs would also benefit. So come on, council, give it a go. I'm sure I speak for all enthusiasts when we say let's have somewhere organised to meet. By the way, I'm no youngster, 61 this year. And that's from Phil Wakeman, Mears Road, Fair Oak.
Judith Martin writes, council should take note. The travel page about London's really cool hotspot is interesting, especially in conjunction with the article a few pages earlier, Economic Crisis Hits Efforts to Let Council Property, page 20, Chronicle, September the 14th. It's years since I've been to Camden Market, but it's long been pretty cool, or hot. Its striking feature is a mass of small enterprises all trade in and around fairly run down once redundant canal side buildings. One visionary developer took a lease from British Waterways back in the 1970s, and the area has never looked back. The same developer set up Container City in the hugely historic Trinity Buoy Wharf and brought a remote and neglected part of the city to flourishing life. I know the area around Coaldrop's Yard and Granary Square rather better, having worked for several years with conservationists to ensure other developers didn't just flatten everything around King's Cross and St Pancras stations in the name of regeneration. Power of Place, a landmark English heritage document on urban conservation, was launched by Labour Arts Minister Chris Smith in the old, freezing and wholly unregenerated St Pancras Ironworks. Once it was announced that Central St Martin's School of Art was to move into Thomas Cubitt's old granary, I felt we were pretty safe. This is all relevant because of Winchester City Council's struggles in dealing with the few old industrial buildings it owns. The Good Shed on Barfield Close is up, again, for reuse. Previous plans for it started well as a dance studio, but ended up so overblown they were unaffordable. Coitbury House, although not mentioned in the list, is another example of a wildly overdone plan that then had to be abandoned. Whenever the council wants to develop, it starts by designing metaphorical gold taps. Huge sums spent on plans are wasted. If the eventual scheme ever comes about, it's unlikely anything will be affordable. Good, insightful developers know that authenticity and affordability are more interesting than bling. Judith Mary Martin, Rumsey Road, Winchester.
And this letter is Traffic Light Woe from Brian Scott. Surely it is technically possible to link the sequence of the traffic lights at the end of Southgate Street with the ones at the top of St George's Street to allow smooth flow of the traffic through both sets of lights being on green at the same time. This would reduce the queuing outside of Barclays Bank and the stopping on the High Street in the other direction. From Brian Scott, Southgate Street in Winchester.
And Lisbeth Rake writes a letter headed Tribute to John. It was good to see the tribute to John Doherty in the Hampshire Chronicle on September the 7th. I worked with him for the last 6 years of his career. However, I knew of him before I joined the staff, as a thoughtful reviewer who applied high standards to the productions at the Chesil Theatre, several of which I directed. Through our love of theatre, we became friends, and one day he, quite shyly, told me he had written a play and asked if I would read it. It was about a Catholic priest who fell in love with a parishioner. With a little editing and some of our most experienced actors, the Chesil presented a rehearsed reading. Aptly, we used the set for the Scottish play. The audience was made up of Chronicle staff, John's friends from the church, and Chesil members. We had a programme printed and set up basic sound and light. The play was well received, and John was thrilled. His brother tells me John kept the programme, and it was on display at his funeral. Thereafter, he showed me all his writings, and even after we both retired, we met regularly for coffee to discuss his latest piece. The best was a memoir of his childhood in post-war Scotland. In places, it could stand a comparison with Cider with Rosie. The Chesil invited John to review plays after his retirement, particularly those written by playwrights he admired, Chekhov, Ibsen, Ratigan, for example. It is good to know that his reviews are in the Chesil archives, held by the Hampshire Record Office. And that's from Lisbeth Rake, Hyde Street, Winchester.
Now,
that concludes the letters for this week. We're now going to have Paul, who's going to read the editorial comment for us.
It's time we learned why he had to be fired. It's been a long old slog for esteemed consultant Martin Pittman. After 4.5 years of battling the senior management team and speaking up on patient and staff safety, his employment tribunal begins on Monday. The top obstetric gynaecology consultant of 20 years has gained thousands of supporters who have tuned in to watch him on the telly, post anecdotes, and condone the trust decision to fire him. The trust has admitted that he was exemplary at his job. So with this in mind and such a wealth of unwavering support from former colleagues and patients, it's time we all learned why Mr. Pittman had to be fired. The trust has denied that he was dismissed for whistleblowing and instead has been actively campaigning to encourage staff members to speak up. So why was such an excellent doctor sacked, and has it been worth all the money, time and energy? After all, the trust is in a dire financial position, and Mr. Pittman was on paid leave for months on end before he was finally let go in March. Hopefully the answers Mr. Pittman and all his supporters have been longing for will finally be shared in the weeks to come. There's a...
Jackie is now going to read first person for us.
Tough Time in a Hut, written by George Hayter. I have just spent 3 days and three nights surviving in one of this country's least comfortable communities. The enclave of substandard accommodation is on an exposed peninsula and is most of the time isolated from the rest of Britain. The only road to the remote community is permanently closed to traffic. My family and I got there by boat. Throughout our 72 hours there, the four of us lived without modern comforts. Our cramped quarters were a wooden hut with no electricity, no hot water, and even no drinkable running water. We had to fetch water from a nearby standpipe. The Spartan settlement, only an hour from Winchester, consists of hundreds of similar huts, 5 toilet blocks, and 1 brick building containing 4 flats. For the inhabitants, life is a battle to shed ubiquitous sand which sticks to their feet and gets in their beds. When we wanted the toilet, even at night in our pyjamas, we had to walk from our hut to a public convenience. The huts are tiny, perhaps 3 metres wide and not much longer, yet each hut is worth more than the average house in Britain. It is thought they currently change hands for over £400,000. The reason for the sky-high price is the picturesque waterside location on the Muddiford Sandspit at Christchurch in Dorset. The huts are arranged in 2 lines. The one on the beach side of the spit faces the sea, with views to the Isle of Wight. The other line, on the harbour side, looks across a lagoon to Christchurch Priory. For sun worshippers and boat enthusiasts, a hut on Muddiford Beach is paradise. Some families have owned their hut for generations, and there are strong neighbourly ties going back decades. A bar and pizza cafe operates till early evening. A ferry to Muddiford Quay and a land train to Hengesbury Head car park operate till late afternoon in summer. Despite the high property prices, living in a beach hut at Muddiford year-round is forbidden. Legally, they are just holiday homes. Staying overnight is only allowed from March till October. There are other disadvantages. There are no trees, and it can get roasting hot on the beach. If you don't like swimming or walking and you tire of watching people in boats, there is not much else to do. The ferry disgorges busloads of people, and the spit can get crowded and noisy with clouds of barbecue smoke. When we were there, fearsome sun turned to cloud after lunch. Thick fog formed in late afternoon, and the serene 360-degree views disappeared. So did the people. Visitors all headed for the ferry, and hut owners withdrew to their huts, even the cafe and bar emptied. The fog grew yet bleaker when rain arrived. Then the wet sand trudged to the toilet block really made you wonder if a hut could be worth a big part of a million. At bedtime, with four constricted in a beach hut's floor space, gymnastically reconfiguring furniture into two double beds is struggle enough to make even the keenest water sports enthusiast question the sense of investing nearly half a million in an overgrown doll's house. It felt good when we got home. After our beach hut, even our little house seemed enormous. Several rooms, no sand, private bathroom, no need to go outside to the toilet. Unlike landlubber me, the rest of the family had found our time at Muddiford Beach luxurious thanks to swimming, paddleboarding and canoeing. I almost agree, because on our last day the fog was gone, the sun shone and my wife and I paddleboarded from the beach hut a mile upriver to Christchurch and back. It was exhilarating. If I had a spare £400,000, maybe a microscopic beach hut wouldn't be a bad idea after all. Like everything, Muddiford Beach is a matter of taste.
Thank you, Jackie. I agree with that. Each to his own is what I say. there are no announcements as such this week, but that we have two What's On items. There is one here which is to do with the Elgar Society, BBC Radio in the 78 era. There's a talk in Winchester on Saturday the 30th of September at 2 p.m. A look back to the early days of BBC Radio when 78 RPM records were the hi-fi of the day. Presented by Jeremy Summerlee, who has worked for BBC Radio for over 40 years. Admission is free. It's at St Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, Winchester. And if you want to get in touch by email, it's southerninfo@elgarsociety.org. That's southerninfo@elgarsociety.org. So just to remind, that's 2 p.m. on Saturday the 30th of September. And the other event, which might be of interest, which is entitled Choir, 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 all with exclamation marks, 7:30 p.m. Choir, Choir, Choir return to the UK and Ireland this October with Teen Spirit, an epic 90s sing-along, a brand new show celebrating everything 90s. That's at the Theatre Royal, Winchester, 22 Jury Street, box office, and play to the crowd. It's, if you want to ring them to book, it's £25, by the way. It's 01962 840 440. So that's the Theatre Royal box office, 01962 840 440. Sunrise and sunset times today. Sunrise was 6:51 a.m. and sunset will be 7:07 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229, and that number can also be found on the key fob which is attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
And the first item is headed Bid to Tackle Plan to Cut Culture Funding. Excuse me. A charity is hoping to work with Hampshire County Council to find a better solution following proposed cuts of £1 million to its services. Hampshire County Council's recent budget review revealed plans to cut funding to Hampshire Cultural Trust by nearly 50%. Chief Executive of the Trust, Paul Sapwell, said venue closures are inevitable if the proposal goes ahead, but it is too early to say which locations and which services would be impacted. The Cultural Trust manages 24 sites across the county, including 5 venues in Winchester, with 878 AD being the charity's latest venture. I think that's the name of an exhibition. And maintains 2.5 million historical items from museum collections. The County Council is the Trust's main funding source, currently providing £2.5 million a year to make up 30% of the Trust's funding. The charity has already proposed to cease operations at Burselden Windmill after Eastleigh Borough Council withdrew its funding. Earlier this year, the Trust was also forced to let go 19 of its 210 staff members to combat inflation. Despite the future being uncertain, Mr. Sapwell is positive that the Trust and the Council can continue their positive relationship to find a better solution that will be less damaging. Mr. Sapwell said, "I couldn't possibly say what we might change. A £1 million cut is going to necessitate everything we do and the services that we provide being reviewed. It is difficult to say exactly what a solution might look like, but we are determined to talk to the Council on how we can mitigate this long-term cut. We want to talk to them about the consequences of these proposals. We fully understand their position and that it is not unique to Hampshire, but it is the degree to which some services are being targeted. There are long-term consequences of reducing services like ours that contribute to quality of life. It will only increase the burden on other services. Hampshire is a wonderful place to live, with an exceptional art scene and heritage. The history and culture is part of the county's identity, and we are part of that infrastructure." Overall, the Chief Executive said the Trust is financially viable, with visitor numbers nearly back to pre-pandemic. He added that any decisions to close venues would be based on much more than each site's revenue, with the organisation ultimately operating as a cultural charity. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, "We've been very open about the huge financial pressures we're facing in the coming years, with an estimated budget shortfall of £132 million by April 2025. Like many local authorities, our budgets are stretched to breaking point because of high inflation, years of underfunding by central government, and growing demand for core services like social care for vulnerable children and adults as more people need our help. With such major budget constraints, we are considering very carefully how we can close this funding gap in future, and regrettably, some very tough decisions are now needed on what the authority can and cannot continue to do in future."
Inquest finds man's death unplanned. A much-loved Winchester man was found dead in a wood, an inquest heard. Eric Donnelly of Drayton Street was found in an area near Sarum Lane, Winchester, on Tuesday, October the 18th last year. An inquest on Monday, 11th of September at Winchester Coroner's Court heard that Mr. Donnelly had been diagnosed with autism, attention deficit hyperactivity and anxiety, and that a recent relationship breakdown had affected his emotional health. A statement from Mr. Donnelly's stepfather, Jonathan Rees, said, "We all loved him so dearly and miss him desperately." The inquest heard that a post-mortem by consultant pathologist Balvinder Shoka found the cause of death to be hanging. Senior coroner Christopher Wilkinson said, "I don't believe he pre-planned his death prior to that day. His act was an impulsive one." Mr. Connolly's cause of death was recorded as suicide. The coroner offered his condolences to his family, as will all our listeners. The report does not indicate the age of this of Eric.
Our firefighters help Morocco quake rescue. 5 Hampshire firefighters have been deployed to Morocco following the devastating earthquake. They are part of a team of 60 UK search and rescue personnel deployed by the Foreign Office, who have arrived in the country with specialist equipment and 4 search dogs. The Hampshire team have set up a base in Amizmiz, around an hour from Marrakesh, and will be managing base operations for the UK fire crews in Morocco. More than 2,900 people were killed in the 6.8 magnitude quake, which stretched from the High Atlas Mountains to Marrakesh. Survivors have been left homeless and in urgent need of shelter, food and clothing. Chief Fire Officer at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service, Neil Odin, said, "The devastation caused by this earthquake has been heartbreaking to see, and our thoughts are with all those affected, having dedicated, specialist, highly skilled firefighters who can respond to a disaster of this nature and scale at a moment's notice has meant that we are able to be part of the UK response during this vital time." The UK International Search and Rescue, UKISAR, is made up of firefighters and staff from 14 fire and rescue services across the country. UKISAR is part of the National Fire Chief Council's NFCC National Resilience Work and is on permanent standby to mobilise and assist when requested by disaster-affected countries. The team responds primarily to oversee urban research and rescue emergencies on behalf of the UK. Any UKISAR team deployed is self-sufficient and provides its own food, water, shelter, sanitation, communications, and all necessary equipment to undertake search and rescue operations for up to 14 days. This is to ensure no additional burden is placed upon a country already suffering demands on its resources following a sudden onset disaster. National Fire Chiefs Council Chair Mark Hardingham said, "The thoughts of UK's fire and rescue services are with all those affected by the devastating earthquake in Morocco. A team of specially trained firefighters and medics from the UK has been deployed to assist following a request from the Moroccan government to the British government. They will be providing specialist technical support."
New bid to beat the pigeons. Winchester civic chiefs are preparing for more work on 3 of the city's historic monuments. It includes another attempt at pigeon-proofing the medieval gateway to the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great. The City Council has plans for Hyde Abbey Gateway, as well as the Buttercross and St Maurice's Tower. The Town Forum heard from Councillor John Tippett Cooper, the chairman of its informal heritage group. Councillor Tippett Cooper said the Buttercross needs cleaning and also, like the gateway, pigeon-proofing. At Hyde Abbey Gateway, the pigeons are again becoming a problem. Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "A lot of work was done to get a deterrent installed. With buildings such as this, they work for a while and then they don't work so well. The pigeons are back and the deterrent hasn't been successful." He said the contractor was returning to have another go at no extra charge to the council. And that's accompanied by a beautiful picture of Hyde Abbey Gateway drowsing in the sunshine, looking quite magnificent. Mm-hmm. It's a shame about those pigeons.
Heritage Open Days are a resounding success. Scavenger hunts, guided tours, talks, crafts and much more made this year's Winchester Heritage Open Days Festival one of the best yet. The festival took place between September the 8th and the 17th. It was a resounding success with nearly 140 free events attracting audiences from throughout Hampshire and beyond. The year's theme of Creativity Unwrapped inspired event organisers with drop-in events like the Open City of Winchester Trust's exhibition of paintings by local artists or the St Denis Church scavenger hunt, supplementing the pre-booked one-off activities. New events this year included visits to the archaeological investigation of the central Winchester regeneration, family fun in the marvellous Middle Ages at Winchester College, and croissant en cartouche at the Winchester Bakery. A highlight of the festival was a day of activities at the Great Hall, which included the debut performance by Winchester Poetry Festival's artistic director, Claire Pollard. Nikki Gottlieb, festival director, said, "It was brilliant to once again run a full festival of events and activities which focused on the history and heritage of Winchester in Hampshire. The creativity on wrapped theme certainly inspired organisations and individuals, and the range of events presented was truly wonderful. We are extremely grateful to our funders and sponsors, and would especially like to thank Winchester College, Winchester BID, the Hampshire Chronicle, Hampshire County Council, the City Council, and Belgarum Estate Agents for their continued support. Of course, the festival wouldn't be possible without the team of volunteers who gave so much of their time and energy to making the Heritage Open Days Festival such a success." It was launched with a talk at Winchester College by historian Alec Loxton. The fundraising event also saw the launch of the Friends of Hampshire History Trust. The next event is a coffee morning at Rick Stein's establishment in Winchester on November the 9th from 9 a.m.
Civic chiefs aim to boost street market. Civic chiefs are preparing to rebrand the thriving Winchester Street Market. The contract for managing the market has expired and the City Council is tendering a new contract. It is currently run by Southern Market Traders Management Limited. The market has been based on the High Street since 2011 and was previously on Middlebrook Street. It has a maximum of 65 stalls on Sundays and 45 on Thursday to Saturday. The Sunday market alternates with the farmers market. The council is looking to improve signage, introduce new branding and gazebos. They are also looking at holding the market in the early evening and to have themed markets. Councillor Lucille Thompson said the council wanted to potentially increase the number of stalls and encourage young entrepreneurs such as art students, capitalising on the local creative sector. When the market moved to the High Street, there was opposition from the shops who feared it would harm their trade. In fact, the market has increased footfall to the benefit of all, the town forum heard. The market is doing so well, it is likely to make a surplus of £133,000, up from the budgeted £81,000. Councillor Thompson said the council was looking at moving stalls back up the High Street towards the Ivy once Debenham's store is relet and the space outside is no longer available. She said the extra stalls were likely at Christmas. Mr. Tate said, "The farmers' market has deteriorated as opposed to the High Street, which has thrived." Councillor Thompson said, "I have met the farmers' market and agree it is a shadow of its former self. I know officers are trying to encourage more stallholders. I know they have gone through a difficult time. We would love to have a vibrant farmers' market. It was the number one destination for many years. When we first moved here 18 to 19 years ago, it was outstanding." Councillor Kathleen Becker said, "The street market is complementary to the High Street shops, not competitors. It brings in people to shop at the market." Councillor Chris Edwards said, "There is great potential to improve the market, but at the heart of the market, the reason it is there is to get a bargain. It is cheaper than in the shops. That is the history of the market. At a time of the cost of living crisis, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that for many people, it is important that the market is offering something people can afford." Town Forum Chairman Mark Reach said, "There is an excellent butcher and fruit and veg, often considerably cheaper than Sainsbury's next door."
portrayed waste bins to be invisible. Eyesore and nose-sore commercial waste bins should disappear next spring with the construction of a new bin store in Winchester. The bins in St George's Street, behind high street businesses, have long been criticised for blighting the city. Councillor Chris Edwards told the town forum that action was being taken. Councillor Edwards, who chairs the forum's informal city group, said, "Commercial waste bins really matter to our residents as well as our businesses." He said, "The issue has got more challenging as the number of food and hospitality outlets increases. They produce more waste compared to a shop of a similar size. The bins on St George's Street behind Godbegot House are an eyesore and a nose sore. A new bin store to lessen the impact, so they will be largely invisible to passers-by in St George's Street, should be completed by March 2024. The bin store on Cossack Lane is going to be extended, and Councillor Edwards said no commercial bin would be left overnight on the street. He said the city needed to take a more holistic approach to waste, producing less with more efficient collection and more recycling.
Vegan diets might suit cats best. Cats might be better off eating a vegan diet, a new study led by an academic from the University of Winchester suggests. The vegan versus meat-based cat food study was authored by Professor Andrew Knight of Winchester University. The study has concluded, "The pooled evidence to date from our study and from others in this field indicate that cats fed nutritionally sound vegan diets are healthier overall than those fed meat-based diets." With the help of their owners, the scientists surveyed more than 1,300 cats throughout a year and compared the health of those on a traditional meat diet to the 9% which were eating a vegan alternative. After making allowances for the cat's age, sex, and neutering status, the study found that average vegan cats were 7.3% less likely to visit a vet with unusual frequency, indicating treatment for illnesses, 14.9% less likely to be on medication, and 54% less likely to be on a special therapeutic diet. The cat owners from the latest survey said their pet's health and nutrition was the top priority when choosing a diet. 51% of them said they would reconsider the cat food they buy. Professor Knight believes a switch to vegan diets for pets could have enormous benefits for the planet. He said there could be major savings in greenhouse gases, land and fresh water use, and food energy. There is no evidence to suggest that cats suffer in any way from a nutritionally sound vegan diet.
New wood supplier saves bonfire night. The organisers of Winchester's biggest firework night event have secured its future after a sudden and unexpected shortage of suitable wood put a question mark over the traditional bonfire. Winchester Round Table, who are staging the charity event for the 65th time this year, were uncertain whether it would go ahead after the previous supplier of wood went out of business. The event is planned in meticulous detail, with an army of volunteers and suppliers working for months to make it happen. However, a new supplier, Associated Pallets, has stepped in and will deliver the wood needed for the bonfire on Saturday, November the 4th at North Walls Recreation Ground. Winchester Round Table are reminding people coming to this year's event that they cannot bring their own scrap firewood for the bonfire, as it needs to be constructed solely from wooden pallets that are formed into cubes and stacked one on top of the other. Tickets are now on sale for the event at winchesterbonfire.co.uk and cost £6 when booked in September. They cost £8 if booked in October and £10 in November. There will be a new and expanded food festival from 3 p.m. and the traditional High Street torchlit procession from 6 p.m. going via Jury Street and North Walls before the lighting of the bonfire and fireworks later in the evening. Alex McMillan, Winchester Roundtable Bonfire Chairman, said, "This is great news for everyone who loves coming to see the bonfire and fireworks every year. Our bonfire is hugely popular and we've worked our socks off to get everything ready for the big night. Now we've got the wood we need to be delivered on the day, thanks to Associated Pallets, we'll put on the show everyone knows and loves with the amazing new food festival thrown in too." And there's a photograph of presumably a previous year's bonfire night with a floodlit field and a huge castle-like pyre of neatly stacked wooden pallets ready to go.
Opticians celebrate 100 years trading in the city. A Winchester Opticians is celebrating 100 years in the city with a cheese and wine evening next month. Rawlings Opticians and Hearing Care at 60 High Street will be marking the centenary with the event on Friday, October the 20th. As well as cheese and wine, they will have a Guess the Name of the Bear, and they will also have a raffle with a variety of prizes including jewellery from Jeremy France, free Pilates session, two-course meal for two from Rick Stein, a body shop hamper, and so on. Singers from Blue Apple Theatre will be performing outside, along with a visit from the Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear. All money raised will go to Blue Apple, and Rawlings will double the money. And that's accompanied by two very interesting photographs. There's one of Rawlings the optician as it is now, looking very modern and sleek in dark slate grey and some marble with modern lettering. And underneath, one that's black and white, and it says it's pre-1972, but it does very much look as if it could be the original shop front with very different style of lettering. And it looks quite different. And I have actually been into Rawlings. I went upstairs to one of the consulting rooms and they had kept there some beautiful panelling from the Art Nouveau period, along with some wonderful stained glass. It's quite a hidden gem.
Man tells of snake attack. A Hampshire grandfather has described the moment he was attacked by an 11-foot python that climbed through his window. Rob Byrne from Bishopstoke suffered minor injuries after the male reticulated python entered his conservatory and tried to bite his arm. The snake has since been recaptured and taken to a reptile centre. He told the BBC he had been locking up his conservatory when he noticed something move through a set of blinds at the window. He said, "Its fangs nicked my arm and drew blood as it tried to sink its teeth into my arm." Rob said it was only his instant reactions that stopped the 11-foot snake from biting him. "It caught the back of my arm with one fang and the other fang got caught in my polo shirt. Once I shoved it away, it was due to halfway across the conservatory, but it pinned me in the corner. At that point, my wife and granddaughter came into the conservatory, saw it, and screamed. That must have spooked it because it then slowly slithered back out of the window." The python was then captured and is now in Tunbridge in Kent, where it is being looked after by the National Centre for Reptile Welfare. The director of the charity told the BBC, "It was highly unusual to find an 11-foot python, as most of those they have received are between 4 and 5 feet. The animal has not been claimed by an owner, and Mr. Newman urged people to really think before buying the snake as a pet."
It's me. Okay.
Young artists celebrate beautiful High Street. A group of young budding artists have been busy painting the shops in Winchester High Street. I think that means in the sense of painting a picture of the shops, not the shops themselves. They've been busy painting the shops in Winchester High Street to raise money for their teachers' charity. Winchester art teacher of more than 40 years, Daphne Vaughan, launched the charity Know Thyself after her son drowned in the USA. Just days before he died, Daphne's son, Tom, said he wanted to leave his job in Los Angeles and set up a company to help mankind. So his mum has carried on his legacy, raising money to help people combat anxiety through hers and her pupils' artwork. A celebration of Winchester by its young artists opened on Friday, September the 8th, as part of the Heritage Open Days and in aid of Know Thyself Charitable Trust. After months of working away at Mrs. Vaughan's home studio in Edgar Road, the group of children, aged 7 to 14, have been able to see their work on display at Winchester City Museum and in the windows of 17 businesses that agreed to buy the artwork. The launch was attended by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, and Winchester Business Improvement District, or BID, leader, Dr. Paul Spencer, Councillor Lucille Thompson, some of the businesses involved, and members of the art world. BID Director Paul Spencer said, "It's amazing. The quality of the work by these young people is terrific. It also demonstrates how beautiful our city is. It showcases Winchester in such a novel way and for such a worthwhile charity. We helped with some of the business connections and made the idea a reality. But Daphne is the one who has gone and done it, and we are very pleased to help. There are not many examples of projects like this. It's not often that young people get to paint their high street and see it on show." Eduardo Mattiini, store manager at Echo, was admiring the painting of his high street shoe shop. He said, "As soon as we put the piece up in our window, a mother and her children said thank you to us for doing so. People have been loving the high street trail." Visitors commended Mrs. Vaughan's bravery after she gave an emotional speech on what started it all. Mrs. Vaughan, aged 73, said, "My world turned upside down when I lost Tom, my only child. However, he threw me a lifeline. I had the adrenaline to set up this charity. It's helped me with my grief. It's given me a purpose, and I thank him for that." The exhibition, alongside a video of the artists at work, was open at Winchester City Museum in the square until Sunday, September the 17th. And that's accompanied by a picture of Daphne Vaughan and her friends. And it looks as if it's in the Discovery Centre from the windows. And one of the paintings is there. It's possibly one of hers, but it certainly looks very attractive.
Stolen. High-value gold jewellery has been stolen from homes across Winchester after a series of break-ins. Police have launched a witness appeal following the theft, with six reports of burglary received since September the 1st, with officers believing the incidents could be linked. On September the 1st, between 10:45 a.m. and 2:30 p.m, entry was forced to an address on Elder Close on Badger's Farm through the front door. Between 5 p.m. on September the 3rd and 6:30 p.m. on September the 4th, there was a further burglary at an address on Shoe Lane. On September the 6th, police received two reports of burglary, one at an address on Priors Dean Road and one on Armsworth Park. Both happened between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Officers were called on September the 9th to reports of a burglary at an address on Bradley Road, which happened between August the 12th and September the 9th. It was reported that lights were seen on in the house on September the 6th. And finally, the police received a report of a burglary on September the 17th at an address on Grenadiers Road between 1 p.m. and 4:20 p.m. A police spokesman said in all of these incidents, high-value jewellery items were targeted and stolen. Entry was forced to the properties and searches conducted. We have conducted a number of inquiries and now asking the public for any information.
Poetry Festival welcomes wide range of performers. Winchester will welcome established and up-and-coming poets to the city's latest poetry festival. This year, Winchester Poetry Festival will be held at the Arc from October the 13th to the 15th, with fringe events taking place throughout October. The festival will host writers and performers from around the UK, as well as showcasing local poets. Claire Pollard, Artistic Director, said, "Some of the best weekends of my life have been at poetry festivals. There is nothing I love more than the buzz of live readings, the sharing of ideas and the sense of being part of an artistic community. I'm honoured to have been able to curate this year's programme for the Winchester Poetry Festival. Our theme, The Languages of the United Kingdom, is a wonderful excuse to showcase a diverse range of exciting poetries. There should be something to whet the appetite of anyone who loves language and literature. I can't wait." The programme combines 25 performances, workshops, discussions and readings. Key events are BSL interpreted and live streamed. There are relaxed performances and 11 events are completely free to attend. Amy Juliet Brown, festival manager, said, "We are making strides towards making Winchester Poetry Festival a more welcoming and inclusive environment where everyone feels able to join in. With the cost of living crisis bringing fresh challenges to the post-pandemic environment, we believe that people from all backgrounds should have the opportunity to engage with poetry in its many forms. Finding common ground is central to our collective well-being, and we believe that poetry can provide a feeling of community and connection through language, people and place. We are proud that almost half of our programme is free to access this year and hope that this opens up the world of poetry to those who might not normally feel able to take part."
Young Actors Focus on Shoebox Appeal Launch. Aspiring young actors gathered to watch the debut screening of a video made to promote this year's Rotary Shoebox Appeal in Winchester. For more than 30 years, Wessex Rotarians have been sending Christmas presents in shoeboxes for disadvantaged children in East European countries. Last year, 18,000 shoeboxes, collected by 50 Rotary clubs, were sent to children in Moldova, Montenegro, Romania and Ukraine. The cardboard boxes are supplied by Wessex Rotary. This year's appeal was launched on Monday, September the 18th at Chesil Theatre, with a new video featuring two child actors, Rory Venn, aged 10, and Lily Cook, who is 11, from the Chesil Youth Theatre, showing people how to make up the boxes and what can be put in them. Rory, from Teg Down, has also been a member of the Youth Theatre since 2021. He said, "The appeal is great as everyone, regardless of whatever country they come from, deserves to have a nice time at Christmas." Rotarian and Shoebox Appeal District organiser Jeff Philpott thanked the children for their effort. He said, "The Shoebox Appeal is our most successful annual humanitarian aid project. We are proud that this scheme allows so many people in our area to celebrate Christmas by sending gifts to children in other countries of different faiths." He said the shoeboxes had benefited over 1 million children so far and added, "The quality of the video is great. It's a wonderful personal message that means so much to the children we help. Everyone I have spoken to said that video really hits the spot with a message that's clear to understand and follow." The video will be shared by 50 Rotary Clubs in the South and shared with more than 400 schools and community groups. 9 schools in Winchester are already taking part in this year's scheme, but anyone can sign up to donate. Boxes are available from local Rotary Clubs, and once filled will need to be returned to them by the end of October. Along with age-appropriate toys and games, the contents need to include items for education, health and hygiene purposes in order to meet international customs requirements. They must not include food, liquids or sweets, sharp items or batteries. To defray the cost of packaging and transport, a small donation of £2 in coins is requested. The new video and more information can be found at Wessex Rotary Shoebox, that's all one word, .org.uk. And it's accompanied by a picture of one of the shoeboxes made up and a lovely photograph of the children from the Chesil Youth Theatre sitting on the edge of the stage, and behind them is a screen with the opening shot of the video that they have made.
A Winchester charity that's been providing musical therapy for people across Hampshire and beyond 15 years is organising a birthday concert. Key Changes Music Therapy is marking its milestone with a live performance by acclaimed singer, composer and broadcaster, charity painter, patron Roderick Williams. He will be joined by Osborne School's rock choir, Rubik's Cube, a harp duet, a chamber choir, the music therapists and some other surprise performance. The event at St Paul's Church this coming Saturday, September the 30th, the following Saturday, celebrates 15 years since Hampshire Music Trust became its own charity, rebranding as Key Changes Music Therapy. Based at Unit 12 in Winnell, the charity has 10 music therapists visiting schools, clubs and clients to help them deal with mental illnesses, learning disabilities, social deprivation and development delay. Project lead Mrs. Becky Reed said, "Considering the state of the world and the fact that charities have gone to the wall, we have got a lot to be proud of. We are supporting some of the most vulnerable people in society. Our survival is partly because there is so much more awareness of how vital music is in our lives, especially since COVID. We want to grow. All the money that we raise goes to providing emotional support for children and adults who might not have a way of communicating other than by music or through music. Music therapy is a fabulous release for them. We're very excited to celebrate the milestone and have a wonderful patron perform." Key Changes Music Therapy has launched a crowdfunder for its 15th birthday to raise funds to support its service. The concert starts at 7:30 p.m. at St Paul's Church on Saturday, September the 30th. Tickets cost £15 per person at the door.
Bicentenary event for Forgotten Riots. An event to commemorate the bicentenary of the Captain Swing riots took place in Winchester last weekend. The Heritage Open Days event was on Saturday from 10 a.m. in the Grand Jury Room, the Castle. The Captain Swing riots in the autumn of 1830 are a forgotten landmark in Hampshire history. Following agitation in more than 60 villages, a grand assize was convened in Winchester Great Hall by the Lord Lieutenant, the Duke of Wellington, at which 300 men were tried. Many were then sentenced to transportation, or in some cases, execution, with a devastating effect on local communities. Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever were at the heart of the agitation. The goal of the bicentenary commemoration is to raise awareness of the riots and the complex issues behind them, and then, in 2030, to stage a series of community-based activities in the locations where the original events took place, including a reenactment of the Grand Assize itself. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "History often seems other, about distant times and distant monarchs. The Swing Project really brings history to life with a bang. Relevant to today's issues, very real in its impact on local communities, and gruesome and inhuman outcome. A great opportunity for local villages to research how their own communities were affected by the riots and their repercussions. I will certainly be encouraging the Worthies History Group to see what the impact was on our villages." And it's accompanied by a photo of the Great Hall, the place where 300 men were tried by the Duke of Wellington.
Cafe of the Year is on winning streak. A Romsey cafe has kept up its winning streak, gaining the most votes from readers to be crowned Cafe of the Year for the third year running. Dish Deli and Kitchen has taken the top spot for the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser's Cafe of the Year competition. The team at the cafe in Latimer Street was delighted to hear the news, having beaten a shortlist of eight other cafes across central Hampshire. General Manager Cameron MacDonald, who's worked at Dish for 8 years, said, "We were thrilled to be even nominated, let alone win it. We want to give a heartfelt thanks to you, our customers, for their votes and their support. We really take pride in every dish that goes out. We have a very loyal customer base and great staff too. Winning for the third time is great recognition of all the hard work we put into the business every day. Here's to many, many more years of keeping Romsey fed and caffeinated." Michael Hedges opened Dish Deli and Kitchen with his partner Rach in 2011 after years spent working in hospitality. As well as claiming the top spot for the Chronicle and Advertiser, the business has just received its third Good Food Award and an Elite Award from Scores on the Doors for its third 5 out of 5 food hygiene rating in a row. The cafe is yet to score anything less than top marks in its inspections.
Festival hails independence. A revived shopping arcade in Winchester City Centre will be showcasing its independent businesses with a new festival. The inaugural King's Walk Festival will have discounts, workshops, live music and food, celebrating the arcade's eclectic blend of shops on Saturday, September the 30th. Winchester City Council recently made £385,000 worth of upgrades to King's Walk, with a newly painted exterior, improved lighting, an illuminated sign and trees providing a backdrop to festivities. A new courtyard garden will be the focal point and a place to enjoy some live lunchtime jazz. Craft businesses will be hosting free workshops throughout the day. Design Junction is running pottery and tufting sessions, and staff at the Well Worn will help visitors make a sashiko stitch patch or mend their favourite denims. Meanwhile, at Bellacrafts Festival goers can try Indian block printing, while children can enjoy crown decorating and budding young performers can join theatres at the Nutshell Theatre. Shoppers will be able to make the most of discounts at Polka Dot Piercing and the Sunflowers Emporium and try a free Pilates class at Winchester Pilates at midday. The King's Walk cafes will be serving some special festival treats. Southdown Social will host a barbecue and craft beer on its terrace, complete with disc jockeys and live music. Open House Deli will have an outside bar and free tasty samples from local producers. The resident businesses have welcomed the recent upgrades, as well as the courtyard garden. Improvements have been made to lighting, signage and decor. Additionally, the revamped seating outside the South Dam Social and Open House Deli provides an alfresco dining spot in the heart of the city centre. King's Walk Festival will be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, 30th of September. The first 250 visitors will receive a free King's Walk tote bag.
Mystery of the failing fountain. It's been baffling plumbers working for the City Council why a public water fountain has stopped working. The fountain is in Market Lane, next to St. Maurice's Covert, and has been out of action all year, a meeting heard. Former City Councillor Ian Tait raised the issue at the Cabinet and said, "The fountain in Market Lane is still not working. I mentioned it in January. It would be good if it was either turned on or taken away." Council leader Martin Todd said, "The water fountain is a matter of some puzzlement." He said water is going into the fountain but not emerging when the button is pushed. It runs on water power and no electricity is involved. Various plumbers have looked at it. We will continue to look at it and get it working. It turns out it is not as simple as we thought. Time and effort is being spent on getting it working again. The similar water fountain in Abbey Gardens is working properly. The fountains have three spouts, one for adults, a second for children, and the third near the base, presumably for dogs. And there's a photo of the water fountain in Market Lane with its three spouts, but it's not working.
Well, that intriguing little piece brings us to the end of our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
Jackie Donnellan.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Richards, goodbye. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio, that's on 99.8 FM and digital, on Saturdays at 5 p.m.